Welcome to Journal Club for November 2nd, 2024. I'm Malcolm Diggs. A couple of months ago, a video went viral on TikTok of a patient named Jessica explaining the lengths she has to go through just to get her various medical providers on the same page. Jessica carries a huge binder to her medical appointments, and from the sounds of it, that binder contains virtually every x-ray, procedure, medication, lab result, and exam she's ever had. It includes everything that any doctor who has seen them has ever documented, prescribed, ordered, or said about Jessica. Some people might watch that video and think, why on earth is Jessica doing this? Why is this necessary? But for the millions of people who have watched and rewatched this video, for the numerous people in the comments who have asked Jessica how to structure their own patient binder, what information to include, and whether to use a cover page, Jessica really strikes a chord. If you haven't seen it, you can find the link in the text version of this episode. I encourage you to watch it for context because Jessica really brings home the human cost of what happens when medical systems don't communicate. The burden this places on patients is overwhelming, and it's unfair that patients like Jessica need to function as an encyclopedia of their own medical history just to achieve some semblance of continuity of care. When medical systems don't share data with each other, it has chilling effects at two levels. One, at the level of individual care for specific patients like Jessica, when different hospitals and specialists don't share data, patient care suffers, and the burden on the patient becomes unreasonably high. Two, at the public health level, especially during a public health emergency, sharing information, key learnings, and best practices in real time can be life-saving. When disparate medical systems don't even share aggregate data, everyone is less able to combat the widespread threats, such as pandemics. So how do we solve this? How can we get different medical systems to share data? There are two distinct approaches to addressing these issues at their respective levels. For individual patient care, getting systems to share data is largely not a technological problem. It's a policy and legislative issue. And in states like California, it's also an enforcement issue. It's about the lack of enforcement of existing laws. Later in this episode, we're going to dive specifically into that topic and discuss how you, especially if you're in California, can hold your medical providers accountable and compel them to comply with current laws that mandate data sharing across systems. At the public health level, that's where this paper comes in. That's the point of the study we're looking at today. For large-scale data, the kind useful in aggregate at the public health level, it's not just about sharing data. It's about dividing the computational burden of processing and analyzing the data. In this paper, the authors developed a federated learning system that achieves exactly that. It allows multiple institutions to process their own patient data locally while using it to train machine learning models that combine insights from all nodes on the network. Since this is Journal Club, I'm going to start with the paper and explain how they designed and evaluated their federated learning system. Then at the end, I'll return to the issue of data sharing at the patient level. If you only want to hear that, feel free to skip the last few minutes. So, what exactly is federated learning and how does it work? Federated learning, FL, is a decentralized machine learning method where local devices, such as hospital servers or personal phones, each train a model on their own data without transferring the data to a central location. Instead, the devices send their locally updated model parameters to a central server, which aggregates these updates to build a global model. This approach enables data privacy by keeping data on the originating device. In a standard federated learning setup, all participants use the same model architecture, which simplifies aggregation but limits flexibility. Heterogeneous federated learning, HFL, expands on this by allowing devices with diverse computational capabilities to contribute, which is especially relevant in situations where some institutions may have high computational power while others do not. In this framework, institutions can use models of various architectures and sizes, which are then mapped to a unified structure during aggregation. The central server manages this alignment by mapping each local model's parameters to equivalent layers or features in a global model. This method enables data-constrained devices to participate by training smaller models, while more resource-rich devices contribute larger models, maximizing data inclusion and diversity without requiring uniform model structures. Now, in medical federated learning, additional complexities arise. Data across institutions can vary significantly in format and quality due to differences in data collection methods and infrastructure. Medical data privacy regulations like HIPAA impose stringent restrictions on patient data, necessitating secure channels and compliance mechanisms within the federated learning framework. These privacy requirements create challenges in aggregating and sharing data safely. To address this, federated learning in medicine typically requires encrypted communication channels, robust identity verification, and privacy-preserving model aggregation to ensure compliance. The paper introduces a specialized architecture for telemedicine data sharing based on heterogeneous federated learning. The system architecture includes two main components: healthcare service providers, HSPs, which hold local data, and a training task publisher, TTP, which includes a parameter server and a key generation center. The parameter server is responsible for aggregating updates from the HSPs, the health service providers, while KGC, the key generation center, manages cryptographic keys for secure model updates. Each HSP, healthcare service provider, first trains the model locally, then sends the parameter updates to the PS, the parameter server, which aligns the different models into a unified global structure. This alignment process leverages a mapping matrix that identifies corresponding layers and parameters in different model architectures, allowing the PS, the parameter server, to merge smaller resource-constrained models with larger ones from high-capacity devices. The technical process involves five steps. 1. Initialization and model selection. The TTP sets security parameters and registers each HSP. Each HSP initializes a local model based on its computational capacity, ranging from simpler low-parameter models to more complex deep models for resource-rich devices. The TTP generates a global model, which encompasses all local model architectures using a model superset approach. The global model structure is defined to include the maximum number of parameters from each layer across all participant models, allowing aggregation without data loss. 2. Local training and model pruning. Each HSP trains its local model using only its own data. After training, the model is pruned. Extraneous parameters are removed, preserving only the core structure relevant to the global model. The pruned model parameters are signed with a threshold signature to ensure authenticity and then uploaded to the PS. We explain more about the threshold signature later. 3. Global aggregation with model alignment. The PS performs model alignment on received updates, so each model's parameters are mapped to a location in the global model based on the mapping matrix. This matrix aligns model parameters from each HSP by tracking layer correspondences. For example, parameters from the first layer of a small three-layer model could map to the third layer of a five-layer model, allowing updates from diverse architectures to contribute equally. During aggregation, the PS iterates over the global model's parameters, combining weights from each corresponding section of the local models. This alignment ensures that every participant contributes to the global model, irrespective of architecture size. 4. Threshold signature and verification, what we mentioned a minute ago. To secure the federated process, the authors introduce a threshold identity authentication scheme based on the SM9 algorithm. Each HSP's private key is split between the KGC and the HSP, and both parties are required to sign the model updates, preventing unauthorized modifications. The SM9 algorithm uses identity-based cryptography, allowing the use of an HSP's unique identifier as a public key. When the PS receives updates, it verifies the signature to confirm the HSP's identity and data integrity before including the parameters in the global model. 5. Feature propagation and regression. Once the global model has been updated with contributions from all HSPs, the aggregated features are backpropagated to each local model. That's feature regression. This process allows each HSP to benefit from the collective knowledge in the global model. The PS prunes the global model into individual models for each HSP based on the mapping matrix, remember the mapping matrix from before, and sends them back. So each institution receives a model that's updated with contributions from all the other participants, but it's calibrated to its specific structure. The authors evaluated this framework using public medical datasets. Experiments show that the aggregated model maintained high accuracy despite varied model architectures and resource constraints, proving the framework's robustness for real-world telemedicine applications. This heterogeneous federated learning framework achieves a significant advancement in enabling data collaboration across diverse healthcare institutions while keeping patient information private and secure. By allowing each institution to train and share only model parameters, it maintains compliance with HIPAA regulations, as no raw data ever leaves the source. This approach is especially crucial in public health emergencies, where immediate insights from data across multiple institutions can drive faster response times and improve patient outcomes. To implement this framework, healthcare providers need secure infrastructure to host local training processes, as well as a centralized parameter server, remember the PS, and Key Generation Center, the KGC, to handle aggregation and authentication. These components must support secure communication protocols, model alignment tools, and the threshold signature cryptography that we mentioned before to protect model integrity and privacy. With those requirements in place, the framework can effectively and securely harness the power of federated learning to address both the privacy concerns and the collaborative needs of modern healthcare. All right, with that pesky journal article out of the way, let's talk about sharing data at the individual patient level. To crystallize the problem here, let's take the example of a hypothetical patient named Mary. Mary's retired and lives in San Francisco. She sees bone specialists at Stanford to help with osteoporosis. She sees pulmonary specialists at John Muir to help with her breathing. Her primary care physician is at UCSF. And in emergencies, her closest hospital is Kaiser, so that's where an ambulance would likely take her. For those not in the Bay Area, those four systems I just named are large medical institutions and service providers within the Bay Area. All huge, all technologically advanced. Now, in a place as high-tech as the Bay Area, in a place that is home to Silicon Valley, in a place that has more tech startups and venture capital cash flow than anywhere else in the world, you would be forgiven for assuming that these four large medical systems would just automatically and seamlessly share information with each other. You would be forgiven for assuming that Mary could just walk into her specialist office at Stanford, and those specialists would automatically have access to all the medication, exams, test results, and everything else that Mary had just done at UCSF, and vice versa. You'd be forgiven for thinking that there is no way that the burden would be on Mary herself to pull data from one system to another, to print out things from one doctor and hand them to another, or to play relay telephone with multiple parties to get them to talk to each other through her. You would be forgiven for thinking there is simply no way, no way, in 2024 that one of these systems would need to mail Mary a DVD of her MRIs so that she could get in a car and drive that DVD over to another doctor's office and hand it to them. You'd be forgiven, but you'd be wrong. It is unacceptable that this is the state of medical data sharing in the 21st century, let alone in 2024. It's absurd and it's obscene, and I'm far from the only person who feels this way. Which is why in 2021, the California Assembly passed AB 133 and Governor Newsom signed it. AB 133 mandated the creation of DXF, California's Data Exchange Framework. The law allowed some time for various medical institutions in the state to get their ducks in a row, but starting January 2023, many healthcare entities were required by law to sign the DXF data sharing agreement and to implement the practices by the end of January 2024. Smaller practices with under 25 physicians don't have to meet this requirement until 2026, but all of the large ones are required to meet it and are already supposed to be meeting it right now. It's November 2024. They were supposed to have this up and running in January. But still, today, real-life patients like Mary can't get their various medical providers to share data. Why is that? Compliance, or lack thereof. If you go to a link that I have in the written version of this, but it's dxf.chhs.ca.gov/find-your-provider with dashes between the words, you can see if your medical provider has signed the data sharing agreement or not. Some large medical institutions in San Francisco are notably absent from that list as of November 2nd, 2024. Others are on the list, but have yet to implement the required systems. Some are sharing only partial data, not all that they're supposed to. different levels of non-compliance exist, and one reason for that is that AB 133 didn't specify any clear enforcement mechanisms, so nobody is holding these institutions accountable for meeting the legal requirements. If you would like to address this, here are three ways I'd personally recommend. Each one increasingly, let's say, assertive. One, if you check the DXF list and you see that your medical provider hasn't signed the DSA, but you think they should have, ask them about it. You'll probably be the first person to do so. Write to the Administration, Legal, or Public Affairs Department. Tell them you can't find their name on the DXF Data Sharing Agreement signatory list and ask why, and inquire about their timeline for compliance. 2. This program is overseen by the California Health and Human Services Agency, CHHS, specifically the Center for Data Insights and Innovation. You can contact them at cdii@chhs.ca.gov. or via their contact form, which I have linked in the text version of this episode. Write to them. Ask if they have a record of your medical institution participating in the DXF or not, signing the data sharing agreement or not, and if not, what they plan to do about it. 3, and this is my favorite option. CHHS is a government agency and can often seem impenetrable to the public, but government agencies are very responsive to elective representatives, especially your state assembly members. Remember, California's Assembly Bill AB 133 created the DXF in the first place, and your state representatives were the ones who made this happen. They also have a direct line of access to the regulatory body overseeing implementation. To find your state representative, go to findyourrep.legislature.ca.gov. Enter your address, and they'll tell you who represents you. Once on your rep's website, you'll probably see contact information for both their capital and district offices. Use the district office information. Contact them by phone, email, or form, state that you're a constituent, and ask them to investigate DXF noncompliance for your specific medical institution. You don't have to allege anything, just ask them to look into it. Representatives have staff whose entire job it is to probe government agencies on behalf of constituents. Make use of this. They're responsive all year, but especially during election season. So if you think your medical institution isn't in regulatory compliance, you may want to make that call on Monday morning. Just saying. All right, to recap where we started. There are two main problems when medical institutions don't share data with each other. One is at the individual level, the other is at the public health level. The public health level can be addressed as they did in this paper, with federated learning, a cooperative system that allows multiple entities to train and manage large machine learning models collectively. The individual level, however, is a matter of legislation and compliance. In some areas, the legislation doesn't exist yet, and institutions rely solely on HIPAA, which often results in data silos. In other areas, like California, the legislation is already in place, and the issue becomes one of enforcement. Hold institutions accountable. Contact them. Reach out to their regulators and engage your elected officials. Shine a light on the fact that they're not doing what they're legally obligated to do. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. I hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.